Welcome in, welcome back to another edition of NBA Sound System. Gil McGregor joined, as always, by my guy, Kyle Irving. K.I., what's going on, man?
Man, we took 1 week off, and it feels like it's been months since we hopped on here. And I don't know if that's because things are moving a million miles a minute between the NBA season kind of winding down a little bit and March Madness creeping up on us. And, you know, the start of March Madness kind of rolls into the beginning, not the beginning, but one of the stages of the NBA draft cycle and all that. So we got a lot to catch up on.
Nah, it's crazy. It's funny because I was thinking about this, and as corny as it sounds, it's clearly a reason they call it madness. Like, there's a bunch going on, especially when you work in the sports industry. But if you are filling out brackets, trying to study up late, listening to a pod, maybe, I mean, by the time you hear this, the first weekend of action is going to be going on. So apologies that we couldn't get this to you last week, but it's madness going on around here. And like you said, a lot to catch up on. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on in the NBA, but there's so much to cover with March Madness, and it really does go hand in hand with what's going on in the NBA. So we'll start with some stuff in the league. This is NBA Sound System. So I don't know. There's been some major occurrences, major events happening in the league, and the way my allegiances are set up, I'm not going to be the one to bring them up, but I can let you bring it up, and then I can respond to it, especially given this is the time for school pride and it's March Madness.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how you were going to tee this one up because, I mean, for those who don't know, I mean, Gil and John Collins were very good friends in college. Teammates at Wake Forest. That's his guy. And well, you know, I'm sure by now you've probably seen what happened to John Collins overnight, but Anthony Edwards threw down, I would say, the poster dunk of the year, even though Jalen Johnson gave him a good run for his money. Like, you know, what, probably 15 minutes. Yeah. 15, 20 minutes afterward. But I mean, Anthony Edwards throws down one of the craziest poster dunks I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's only right that it happened pretty close to the anniversary of the LeBron James on Jason Terry, because I haven't seen a human being like detonate on someone like that. And this is all due respect to your boy, John Collins, but
he
was just in between it and the rim. And no matter who was between it and the rim, you were going to get demolished there. And he threw it down so hard that he fractured his finger. I mean, like, it literally looked like one of those dislocated his finger. It literally looked like one of those like glitch dunks in NBA 2K where like it happens and right away you're like, that would never happen in real life, where like the body hits the floor and they're flexing on top of him and all of that. And it's just like, I mean, that was the dunk of the year. And of course, the way that Anthony Edwards is, he's going to celebrate it like it's the dunk of the year. He said it's the dunk of his career. So now I'm going to pass it back to you and see what you got on your boy JC.
Okay, so you know what? The way I'm going to talk about this is going to be clear where my allegiances lie, but I'll be clear. Like, what Ant did is ridiculous. And I saw somebody tweet that he had probably the best dunk of his career within like 2 weeks of the best defensive player of his career, because we were just on here talking about the chase down block that he had. So let's get that out of the way. Crazy dunk, probably dunk of the year, and it's probably going to be really hard for anybody to top that. Now, looking at the dunk, breaking down the dunk, and I'm saying this to give credit to Anthony Edwards, but also understand, JC, like, if you see somebody taking off from the broken line, the last thing that you're going to expect them to do is dunk. Like, that is why – that's what made it so crazy, is where he took off from, like, in transition, fast break. And I think the other thing we talk about so much, like, the fact that it was a dunk, or quote-unquote was a dunk, wasn't a dunk, the throw-in aspect of it. You know, Blake Griffin used to do it, but Blake Griffin's 6'10". Anthony Edwards being 6'5", taking off from the broken line, made it even crazier. Again, like, the physics of it don't make sense. But one last thing I'll say, because somebody posted a couple of reel of the pictures of Anthony Edwards' posters that he's picked up in his four-year NBA career, which is pretty crazy. And then they quote tweeted and say, hey, look, you can do the same thing for John Collins. So he, you know, if you play long enough and you put other people on the same end, I mean, whether it's, you know, Joel Embiid, I think he got somebody from Detroit, I forgot who it was, but he's gotten a couple of people. I think he got Bismack Biyombo this year too. So it's one of those things where, like, you know, sometimes it's not your day, and I'm sure, you know, and also, honestly, he got me too in practice. I went up for one. I thought I could get my hand on the ball. I don't know what I was
really thinking. So, okay.
Again, I can also sympathize, because, you know, sometimes you think you can make a play and then you get out athleted I guess
yeah.
I don't even
know if that's a word. Out-athleted.
But to,
yeah,
to
yeah.
say that you get out-athleted, that's the word of the pod is out-athleted. So, you know, two of the best poster dunkers in the league. But big shout out to Anthony Edwards. And again, like, that's one of those things where we talk so much about that it factor that he has and poster dunks like that, but also like the showmanship that went with it during and after the game. Dude is a character. So I got to give him credit, get credit where it's due.
Yeah. And the thing that's crazy too is that, like, we're only a month away from Anthony Edwards. I mean, I know he's played in the postseason before, but like this version of Anthony Edwards, like super, like, yeah. you know, on the, if he's not already a superstar, like on the brink of superstardom, Anthony Edwards playing in the postseason and big moments like that. I mean, as we know by now, is not going to make him shy away from trying things like that again. So this is like, mm-hmm. I mean, I know that really truly was like a one of one poster dunk, like just how explosive it was and the level of contact and the way that he had to, like, he kind of threw it in the rim, but he still kind of got his hand on the rim. Like, that is one of one, but it would not surprise me if in a month's time he throws down something like that in like game two of the first round of the playoffs and you and I are right back here talking about it again.
Yeah, it's funny you said that, and that's the last thing I'll say before we switch over to some March Madness stuff, because it does tie in with the NBA playoffs, because we are less than a month away from that. You got, and correct me or please add another name if I'm not thinking of somebody, but potentially Anthony Edwards, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Zion Williamson, Tyrese Haliburton, Paolo Banchero, all in line for their first playoff debuts as the guy. And there are a lot of things that come with that. I saw somebody kind of tweet out, you know, what happened, you know, to certain different players, their first playoff runs as a guy, whether it was LeBron getting to the second round with the Cavs, you know, Kobe getting that 3-1 lead against the Suns, but the Suns just kind of had Steve Nash, they had the MVP, they had the 7 seconds or less, and they wore him down and they came back. But of those four or five names that I just rang off, did I leave anybody out first? And who do you think is in line for the biggest debut? Shai's got a little bit of a head start, and so does Ant, because they've been there before, but I really think this is their first time as the guy. I know Ant was the guy adjacent now, but there's no question
right.
now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, I think, like, it's pretty safe to say that Ant is his first playoff series as the guy. Like, even,
right.
you know, the playoff series that he played in the past against Memphis and stuff. Like, Karl Anthony Towns, who's kind of 1A, 1B. You could argue who was 1A, who was 1B and whatnot. But first off, no, I don't think you left anybody out. You know, I'm really excited to see someone like Paolo Banchero, just because he's so young, like, see how he really steps up to that moment, because the Magic are playing really good basketball right now, and they are going to be really tough out in the playoffs just because they have one of the best defenses in the NBA. Like, you know, which is, I guess, surprising, but also maybe not when you look at the roster and the length that they have and the versatility they have. So I'm really excited to see Paolo play in the playoffs. But, you know, like, I feel like ever since the middle of the season, once, like, you realized OKC is not going anywhere and they are one of the best teams in the NBA this season, and it was a lock that they were not going to be a play-in team, but a playoff team in a high seed, you know, hosting playoff games. I feel like every time I have them on my TV now, I'm like, I cannot wait to watch this OKC Thunder team play in the playoffs. Like, I am very excited to see this version of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, potentially the MVP of the league, playing in, you know, a postseason series where he is the man and doing it alongside a talented team with guys like J-Dub, guys like Chet, guys like Josh Giddey. Like, that team is really, really good, really, really fun. And I think that Shai is going to, everything that we have seen from him this NBA season in terms of just his dominance and how unstoppable he is as a scorer, how clutch he's been, I think we're actually going to see that magnified even more in the postseason. I think he's going to step up and match that level of intensity.
Call me in with that too. You know, it's funny because the Thunder have gotten where they are. They've had a very, very interesting, but also very, very fortunate franchise history in just, I guess, 15, 16 short years in Oklahoma City, and won't get in all of that. That's something we could talk about at a different time. But, you know, that magic that they had those early years of KD, Russ, and James Harden for a few years, Ibaka, all of those guys. And the magic still was there, you know, after KD left and it was Russ's team. You know, I think they just had a specific connection with that team, and it kind of lost its luster a little bit, that quick, brief Paul George era. But now where they're at right now, not even in a sense, and I've written about this before, not even in a deja vu sense of, you know, it does feel like they're in a similar spot that they were in 2010, 2011, but just like the excitement around that Thunder team. But I will give a plus one to the Magic too. Like, it might take a lot, but you know, they are one at the time of recording, they are, you know, winning 9 of their last 13 away from a 50-win Magic team. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility that the Magic could win 50 games. So shout out to them. Jamal Mosley got a contract extension for that. So
well deserved.
24-9 at home, too. Well deserved. So thinking back to, you know, back to those old Magic crowds when they had the half blue, half white shirts everybody had on, and they like kind of the blue and white ignite. So I don't know if they'll bring that back, but you know, to see a good basketball team in Orlando, see Paolo Banchero be that guy. I know there's been a lot of people splicing film that he kind of moves like LeBron with some of the things that he does, and it'll be fun to see how he does that. Yeah, how he does that on the postseason stage. Now, perfect segue, because Paolo Banchero, you were the one 2 years ago. For all the way through, Paolo Banchero, number one pick. He needs to be the number one pick in the draft. He should go number one. Up until that final moment, all the smoke screens went away, and he was. And it was something you saw in him during his one-year career at Duke, which brings us now to March Madness and where we are. And an interesting time for college basketball prospects, and we've talked about it a little bit before. But now that the tournament is here, and again, when you hear this, some teams will be eliminated by now, then there'll be some other guys to keep your eyes on for that second weekend. But when we think about this tournament, where do we even start with the amount of talent in the college game? Because this is an opportunity for everybody to really lock in and I guess take a look at some of the guys who hopefully will lead their teams to the second weekend and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, there's, even though, you know, guys like Isaiah Collier and, you know, Jason Lee, Bronny James, you know, we don't know if Cody Williams is actually going to make the NCAA tournament or not. Colorado's playing in the first four. We're recording on Tuesday right now. Colorado's playing in the first four on Wednesday. So, you know, like, there are some top prospects whose teams did not qualify for March Madness, which, you know, is kind of a shame, because especially as like a draft evaluator, you want to see what they're capable of on a big stage like this. So I really hope that Cody Williams and Colorado make it through. But, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, just because those guys like that aren't going to be available. And then, you know, you have the top picks, a couple of them playing overseas in France, some of them playing overseas in Australia, Serbia, a couple guys from the G League Ignite. Like, there's a lot of NBA prospects who are not participating in March Madness. But if you're an NBA fan, that shouldn't shy you away from this year's tournament, because this year's tournament is still loaded with talent and guys who, you know, they all contribute differently to their teams. But, you know, you look over at Kentucky, they have multiple prospects. UConn has multiple prospects. Tennessee has a guy, like, you know, you can go down the list through and through. You know, Kansas has guys, like, and all of a sudden, like, if you're, you know, familiarizing yourself with some of the big boards, I just had mine published over on the Sporting News, you know, mock draft coming on Wednesday as well. But, you know, if you're familiarizing yourself with these names and then all of a sudden you start pairing these names and these teams and now you're watching them play on the national stage, you're going to quickly find out that, you know, even though this is not a highly touted draft class, there are contributors in this draft class, a lot of long-term projects in this draft class as well. But, you know, they're guys to be excited about if your team is, you know, maybe not fighting for a play-in spot anymore and you're starting to look towards the lottery, you know, the Raptors included. So, you know, there's still plenty of prospects, and I'm sure we're going to break down some of them here. But, you know, the more that I'm starting to evaluate this draft class, the more that I'm starting to get excited about, you know, some of the potential long-term projects that these guys, you know, how they might be able to improve certain areas of their game and turn into everyday NBA rotation players.
I like that. I like that, you know, the term prospect is really important, because and it's an important differentiation, and that kind of ties in with the questions I got for you here. Because if you guys don't know, Kyle Irving is our resident NBA draft expert. Spends a lot of hours, a lot of time, a lot of days doing this year after year, and he's been doing it for a lot of years. So I got to give you your flowers for that, KI. You mentioned Cody Williams, big name, the brother of J-Dub Williams on the Thunder. So it's something going on in that family with the way they play the game. But prospects, a lot of that in the word, there's a lot of potential with that too. So when you look at this field of 68, well, technically Howard's already been eliminated, so it's 67 right now. Virginia wasn't looking too good when we started recording this, so it's really 66 by the time you hear this.
I know you're not upset about that either.
Lower than that up. Oh gosh, man. Don't even get me started about that. But they do have Ryan Dunn, who I jokingly say this, but I also say that he's the best defender ever. Like, he can look like the best defender ever at times. And I know you're pretty high on him. He's a guy who I meant to mention the last time we talked about draft prospects. But that being said, among guys in this tournament, who do you have as your best college prospect and why?
So I actually, right now on the piece that is going to get published on the Sporting News, I think tomorrow, maybe Thursday, the day of the tournament, Cody Williams is listed
out
now. As,
when you hear this, it's out. Go look, go
Yeah, exactly. Cody Williams is listed as my number one prospect in the tournament. And that's just based on long-term potential. But again, we don't know if Colorado is actually going to be in the tournament, so there might be adjustments made there. But I'm actually going to change my answer, you know, on the spot, even though that's something that could be published in writing, just because Cody Williams is someone who he is very much a work in progress. Like, he's not even a starter on Colorado. He was at the beginning of the year. They have a lot of upperclassmen. That Colorado team's pretty good. They got other NBA guys like Tristan Da Silva, KJ Simpson. Like, they have other players who are on NBA radars, but they have a lot of upperclassmen. So Cody Williams doesn't start games. And honestly, I mean, in the Pac-12 tournament and at the end of the Pac-12, when I was watching him, he wasn't really closing games either. So, like, you know, he's not the typical number one prospect that you're going to turn on like Paolo Banchero, and he's going to be dominating every single game, carrying his team to, you know, wins on wins on wins, going to the Elite Eight, Final Four. That doesn't mean that he's not a good NBA prospect. It just means that on his team, that is not his role. So I'm going to change my answer, and my number one prospect to watch in March Madness is Rob Dillingham out of Kentucky. And okay. Rob Dillingham is, I mean, Rob with the shifts is his IG handle. He is one of the shiftiest players in the country. He is a magician with the ball in his hands. He is an NBA level shot creator. His story is pretty crazy. Like, he was a Donda Academy guy, which, for those who don't know, Kanye West had started his own school and was trying to build this basketball team. And then, like, I think, like, accreditation wise, the school just went through, or maybe it was funding, whatever it was. And all of those players, Rob Dillingham included, were left without a high school to go to, a high school to attend to. So a lot of these players had to transfer. Rob Dillingham took his talents to Overtime Elite, which is where, you know, guys like Amen and Asar Thompson played last year. They both got drafted top five. And OTE actually created a new rule specifically for Rob Dillingham, where he could maintain his college eligibility and not get paid and still be able to attend Kentucky after 1 year playing in OTE. So he, you know, forego the rest of his high school career, played quote unquote professionally, semi-professionally, whatever you want to call it, at OTE. And now he's at Kentucky and he is coming off the bench. He is a prolific scorer. He is capable of going for 30 on any given night. He can make any type of shot off the dribble that you want him to. He's a solid passer and playmaker. He averaged 15.4 points per game all off the bench this season. If you look at per 40, he's averaging almost 27 points per game if he's playing, you know, not that anybody's playing a full 40 minutes in college basketball, but if he was playing starter minutes, he would probably be averaging closer to 20, 22, 24 points per game. And he was the SEC Sixth Man of the Year. And I'm going to ask you on the spot real quick, can you tell me who the last Kentucky guard was to win Sixth Man of the Year? Because I'm not saying it's a player comparison, but it's an interesting name.
Ooh. Well, I was going to say Devin Booker.
It is Devin Booker.
But that might not be. It is Devin Booker.
It is Devin Booker. It is Devin Booker. You nailed it.
I had to make up for getting that Will Chamberlain question wrong last
week. True.
2 weeks ago. So I'm back bad 500.
This was an even harder question than the last one. So you actually got the tougher question right. But Devin Booker was last SEC Sixth Man of the Year. Rob Dillingham was SEC Sixth Man of the Year. And, you know, to me, he feels like one of those prospects who might benefit from some of the guys that got overlooked, some of the other Kentucky guards that got overlooked before him, like Tyrese Maxey, you know, guys like even Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jamal Murray, the list goes on and on. I feel real confident about Rob Dillingham and the way that he projects in the NBA just because of how talented he is offensively. And I think he's going to be a player that a lot of people in the nation, a lot of people in the world that are tuning into March Madness are quickly going to fall in love with because of his play style.
You know, something I was thinking about with him, he's a local guy from Hickory, North Carolina, or the area, grew up around here or around Charlotte, I should say. And he also is now a Skims guy. He's got the Skims thing going for him too with Kim Kardashian and a couple other March Madness star, I think what it was that they called him. So shout out to him for that too. But when you mention the Kentucky guard and maybe think about the line of Kentucky guards, like, it feels like every time you turn on a game, you see one of those guys. And if it's not organic, then don't force it. But I'm curious, when you ask about players and people are trying to envision players, is there anybody that he reminds you of? And does he happen to remind you of any of those guys more than the other? Or is it somebody completely different?
I did already mention Tyrese Maxey, and you know what? That was actually something that I was thinking about today when I was working. I was like, I haven't really gone through and given like official player comps for these guys in my mock draft that, you know, right before it goes into the NBA draft. I always like to try and come up with like a plays like comparison for every single player that is on my big board, just because it gives, you know, NBA fans who are not college basketball fans, not watching overseas basketball, at least a rough idea of who these guys play like. You know, the lazy comparison is Tyrese Maxey because they're both Kentucky guards. They're both extremely fast. They both get downhill. They can both, you know, create shots off the dribble. They're both not necessarily known for their defense, but they can play make a little bit. But I'm going to have to come back to that one because I don't have one on the spot right now. But that does kind of give you a sort of an idea of the play style that Rob Dillingham has.
Absolutely. So you know, just keep it locked in with us here because we're going to have more stuff, especially this summer when we prep for the draft. You'll have like a perfect one nailed down by then, because I'm sure you'll have it. Shades of whoever it is in that NBA draft. It is wild. You know, before we go to a break real quick, I'm just thinking about just how many guys, like when you really think about it, like it's not like exaggeration. Like the Raptors have one, Emmanuel Quickly. Like thinking about Devin Booker, you know, kind of being more of that combo guard, but Jamal Murray, like you said, Tyrese Maxey, Shea, like all of these guys, you know, playing under Cal. And it really goes back to, you know, kind of a John Calipari thing, because it wasn't Kentucky, but Derrick Rose, Tariq Evans at Memphis also did big things under John Calipari. And then Eric Bledsoe at Kentucky as well. So the lineage of guys who didn't even blow up the way that they were expected to. Brandon Knight, like the list really does go on, and to know that Dillingham could be the next guy in that list. I was actually expecting you to say a different guy that Ross Kentucky blew on them. But, you know, I like that one too. I was just wondering, I know you gave a big shout to Reed Shepherd last time, but that's somebody else who I feel like, based on what I've heard you say about him, is somebody worth keeping an eye on too.
Yeah, for sure. Reed Shepherd is like probably the most sound prospect that there is in this entire draft class. Like the guy just, he does not make mistakes. He is a complete two-way player, and he's unassuming because, you know, he's a 6'3 guard who you wouldn't expect to be like very stout defensively, but like I'm pretty sure he averages over 2 stocks per game, like steals and blocks. I mean, he's shooting like over 50% from three on, you know, it's not like he's someone that takes, you know, 1-3 every couple games. Like he's firing away at all times. And, you know, he's a sound playmaker. He can play on or off the ball. He really is the type of player who you could put him on any roster and he is going to find a way to blend in. He's just one of those guys that can do a little bit of everything. He does a little bit of everything well. He plays with a high basketball IQ. He really, really, really grinds defensively to make up for what he doesn't have, you know, maybe speed-wise, athleticism-wise, things like that. And, you know, I mean, that's a reason why you're starting to see him, just because he's so plug and play, pop up in the top five on these mock drafts. You know, spoiler here, like, or maybe it's not a spoiler by the time this drops, but like I have him going number 4 to the Charlotte Hornets, actually. Like I know Kevin O'Connor had him going number 1 overall to the Spurs. And like, you know, for a 6'3 guard, that kind of seems like a lot to have him, you know, 6'3 freshman guard going number 1 overall, but just how seamlessly he can fit on an NBA roster and just the high level that he plays at and the way that he just elevates everybody around him. Once you see him play, it'll make a lot more sense.
If you read Kyle's draft content the way you should read his content, it shouldn't be a spoiler by now. But if you haven't heard it by now, go and check it out. Kyle Irving's mock draft, I don't know, is 2.0, 3.0 over
technically
at the
2.0
News ahead of March Madness. Technically 2.0 ahead of March Madness. Now, we talked about things through the lens of prospects. We'll throw it to a quick break and we'll talk a little more in the present, best players in the tournament and how that impacts who could hoist the trophy and be the last team standing. So we'll throw it to a quick break and we'll catch you in a second. All right, so we know at this point your brackets are in, you submitted your picks, and you may or may not be feeling good about it. You're feeling bad about it if your team was upset on Thursday, because that's honestly on you. That's pretty bad. But besides the point, you know, I think there are a lot of talented players that are very good cosplayers who may or may not translate. There are some that do translate. We've talked about this in the past, you know, looking at UNC and Armando Bacot's been an outstanding college player, but we don't know if that'll translate to the next level. We had the same conversation about Drew Timmy in years past. I'm curious what you think this year, and again, another two-parter for you, but who you are looking at, you know, all these teams, who is just the pound-for-pound best player in this tournament? And for this specific player, is that going to translate to the next level?
So this is going to start with a disclaimer as well, kind of the same way that Cody Williams did. Because I do not want to disrespect the entire country of Canada and not call Zach Edey the best player in this tournament. Zach Edey is the best player in this tournament. He is.
Okay.
I was not going to disrespect the entire country like that. Zach Edey is the back-to-back player of the year for a reason. Naismith player of the year for a reason. I mean, the guy has dominated college basketball for the last three seasons. He's been absolutely incredible this year, and Purdue is looking to right its wrongs from last year. But, and it comes with a but, he is not the player that I want to talk about, because you know what? We've seen a lot of Zach Edey. We understand who Zach Edey is. We understand what he does, everything like that. The player I want to talk about is Dalton Knecht out of Tennessee. I think he could legitimately be 1B to Zach Edey's 1A for the best player in this tournament.
Okay.
And for those of you who are not familiar with Dalton Knecht's story, it is also a crazy one. He spent 2 years at a junior college in Colorado, then 2 years at Northern Colorado, where as a junior in college, he only averaged 9 points per game for Northern Colorado. And then all of a sudden, he became a 20-point per game as a scorer. And then he transferred to Tennessee and became the most impactful transfer player in the entire country. And now he averages 21 points per game. He's a three-level scorer. He's a solid rebounder. Defense, not so much. But he is someone who has put up 6 30-point games, 140-point game against Kentucky. There is not a shot that he does not like. Let's put that out there right away. He will shoot anything, anywhere, anytime. And I'm sure his teammates might get frustrated at how much he fires away at some points. But he is an incredible talent. He is someone who I actually have projected to go top 10 in my NBA mock draft, just because I think he fits, his game translates so well to the NBA level. And I do think that he is the type of player who, I mean, hey, if you catch him on an off night, then maybe Tennessee's going home early. But otherwise, I think he really is talented enough to potentially carry this Tennessee team as far as they can go.
Yeah, that's going to be my next question. You know, we don't see it very often. You mentioned this story, 2 years at a JC, 2 years at Northern Colorado. So this is year five for him. He will be 23 next month. And I think, do you think he's very much fits into that, like kind of what you get from him day one is you know what to expect. He kind of comes in a little more polished because he has that pedigree. He's not a veteran. He hasn't played in the NBA yet, but he's certainly proven to be an NBA caliber talent. But the fact that he probably could come in right away for a team that's, you know, late lottery, that probably is closer to winning than teams at the top of the order. And they could probably be that piece that knows exactly how to kind of fill in that role while learning the NBA game. I feel like I'm starting to try to guess what you're saying, and I should just let you explain a little more what you expect from him at the NBA level.
No, that's, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, he feels like someone who, again, you talk about plug and play. He's someone that can just come in. He can knock down shots on the perimeter if that's all you need him to do, catch and shoot. But he can also, you know, he can create his own shot a little bit. He's not someone that's going to completely break someone down off the ball and break their ankles and, you know, make an SC top 10 highlight by making someone touch earth. And, like, you know, it's not going to be that. But he is a really solid scorer from all three levels. He is a physical player. He's listed at 6'6". You know, you never know what a player actually weighs because, you know, what they have on the school website and what they have on Basketball Reference and all these things are all over the place. But I saw 213 on the Tennessee website. So, you know, he's a body too. You know, he plays physical. Yeah. He doesn't shy away from contact. He's an incredible competitor. And, you know, you'll see that in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, like you said, it is kind of rare to see a player that old being projected in the lottery. But to me, like, Dalton Knecht feels like someone who is so ready for the NBA level and can contribute right away, which can't really be said about a lot of players in this class because so many of them are going to take time to develop or round out skills, you know, that they need to work on, where he feels like he's more of an NBA ready prospect at this point.
I will say, you mentioned he's not going to make it touch earth, but I do remember the first time I heard his name was that dunk he had in the exhibition against Michigan State. Was it?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Like,
yeah.
Who is this dude from Tennessee that's, like, you know, putting people on posters like that?
Where did he come from?
He might catch you. Where did he come from? But, you know, salute to this Tennessee team. They are maybe a sleeper for some people. And I will just spin back a little bit because, you know, you got to give credit, you know, where it's due. You mentioned the two-time player of the year, Zach Edey. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about him a little bit. I think he's came back another year, unfinished business, lost as the one seed last year, and I'm sure that was embarrassing for him, the entire program. One note, the last time a number one seed lost in the opening round, they came back the next year, won the whole thing. Don't know if that fate awaits Purdue, but in covering him and talking about him as a player and a prospect, I think the biggest thing for people, and I don't mean to call people casuals, but I think it's a casual take to develop, is that he's just bigger than everybody. He's 7'4". Of course he's going to dominate. He's bigger than everybody. But he's more nimble than your most 7'4" people. I mean, he's no Wimby, but who is, right? That's an alien. But like the fact, and he's added to his game, and he's continued to evolve as a player. So I guess, how do you dispute those narratives about Zach Edey and what he brings to the table now to try and lead Purdue to a title, but then next year as he tries to really forge a lane in the league that a lot of people said and are still not sure he can do?
Yeah, I think the thing that's really interesting, especially for someone like me who, you know, I don't have any inside sources. I don't have, you know, people calling me and giving me updates of what NBA scouts are thinking and things like that. So a lot of times, like when it comes to intel, you got to rely on the guys who have it. And, you know, Jonathan Givony over at ESPN and Jeremy Wu over at ESPN have had him mocked in the lottery or somewhere in the first round all year. So, you know, that for me now, I'm like, okay, now I want to like go watch this guy's game, watch the tape and figure out what has he improved? What has he done differently that made him, you know, a player who was maybe a second round pick or undrafted last year into a first round pick this year. Some of the biggest things that I've noticed personally, one is the passing. Like he just feels way more poised in the post. Like teams are throwing 2-3 bodies at him. And last year it felt like, you know, he was kind of skipping a beat for a second and then trying to make a decision. He wasn't just like naturally reading and reacting. Passes were off the mark sometimes. And you know, his teammates are getting wide open looks off of these because, again, they have to throw so many bodies at him to contain him because he's so dominant down low. So the passing is really impressive to me. The other thing that I noticed last year when I was watching a lot of, like, you know, how he operated in the post, like he's not someone that is going to like wow you with like Hakeem Olajuwon footwork, but he has improved his footwork a little bit. He is, like you said, he's lighter on his feet than you might expect for someone of his size. But the big thing last year that I noticed is he would never use his left hand. Like he refused to take lefty post hooks or push shots or whatever you want to call it. Like everything was to his right. Even if he was on the left side of the basket, everything was still going back to his right. Where this year, I mean, he's made improvements. I still think he needs to improve that left hand even more to you know, impose his will at the NBA level. But I think he's made an improvement there as well. So, you know, I mean, it's going to be an uphill battle for him to like be an impact player in the NBA just because it'll be so situational. You know, he's going to have to play in drop coverage and he's going to have to, you know, bust his ass in order to like keep up with guards on the perimeter, like, you know, faster wings, things like that. But, you know, he really is a physically imposing person who is, you know, he's a great rebound seeker. Like he crashes the glass. He's a good shot blocker. You know, he does have offensive talent that goes beyond just being bigger than everybody else. So, you know, I do see where he's getting a little bit more first round buzz, but I do still think that it's going to be very situational of where he could succeed. And again, another spoiler, one spot that I had him going 29th overall to the Denver Nuggets, because, you know, that's a team that could use a backup center. And who better to learn from than Nikola Jokic, who was also just bigger than everybody else, but also happens to be one of the most skilled players to ever touch a basketball. So, you know, if he can find himself in a situation like that, you know, who's to say that Zach Edey can't turn into an NBA player?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's the thing. That'd be a crazy landing spot for him. They've done that a few times now with what they did this past year. We've talked about Peyton Watson and bringing guys in. I think they'll continue to do that. And I think that they're really smart in having that kind of approach. One quick shout to a few of the Canadians. Can't name them all in March Madness, but on the women's side, Aaliyah Edwards at UConn, Yvonne Ejim at Gonzaga, younger sister of Brewster Academy alum Melvin Ejim, and Canada national team veteran Melvin Ejim. On the men's side, you got Ryan Nemhard at Gonzaga, Aiden Holloway at Auburn, Quincy Guerrier at Illinois, Zach Edey, of course, Emmanuel Miller at TCU, older brother of Timberwolves rookie Leonard Miller. So a few other names to keep an eye on all throughout, but the way that Canada's basketball scene has really just continued to blossom over the past few years, anywhere you turn, wouldn't be surprising to see a Canadian have a big role in a national championship team or at least a deep run in this tournament. That being said, people's brackets are in already, so now it's no spoiler. It's not giving them any answers to the test. Who do you think is going to emerge victorious and win the tournament this year? I think personally, I'm going to say I think Connecticut is the best team in college basketball. But there's a reason we haven't seen anybody go back to back in almost 20 years. It's really hard to do in a tournament where you're one and done. If you lose, you have an off night. If something goes wrong, a bounce doesn't bounce your way, it's done. But that being said, who you got?
Yeah, I mean, UConn is the best team in the country, right? But like, I don't want to just go chalk and pick the number one overall seed. I'm sure you can tell by the way that I was talking about Reed Sheppard and Rob Dillingham. I'm really high on Kentucky. And, you know, that was my personal pick to win the national championship on all the brackets that I'm filling out and everything like that. Just because they can put up points in a hurry. They have a lot of veteran players. You know, Antonio Reeves, a guard that's been there forever. They brought in a transfer in Trey Mitchell. You know, it's a deep team. I mean, Calipari has played like literally like 11 guys at different points in this season in his rotation, sometimes due to injury, sometimes just because they have the depth and they can afford to do that. And then one of the biggest things, I mean, honestly, a lot of the time when I'm looking at picking a national champion, it is, do you have upperclassmen guards and do you have NBA talent? And I mean, Kentucky checks both of those boxes. They have the NBA talent. They have the upperclassmen guards. The question for Kentucky, if they can actually win the national championship, is, can they play consistent enough defense to get it done? And that is to be seen. But I'll say that, I say all that to say, and I'm sure, you know, you're going to talk about UConn a little bit if that's who you got as your national champion. But, you know, Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, Alex Carabin, Stephon Castle, Donovan Clingan, that is the best starting five in the country. That team is also extremely deep. And the only team that can really get in their way is themselves. So I don't know if that's who you have as your national champion, but.
It feels boring, but it feels like it's time that we do see that happen. They're going to be tested a little bit. I mean, to think that, you know, the teams that are in their region, you know, also made it to the Final Four last year. It's them, Florida Atlantic, San Diego State. Who knows who will kind of make it through at this point. They will be tested. And it's wild to think that the guys that have moved on from last year, we've shouted out Jordan Hawkins on this pod a number of times. And to say that they lost key contributors, and I don't know if you toss the rock up between this year's team and last year's team, it'd be quite the game. So you know, I think that the coaching is, you know, something that will set them apart as well. So it does sound boring, but at the same time, it's a pretty risky pick given the fact that we haven't seen it since Joakim Noah, Al Horford, which is really wild. We talk about this, the fact that he's still playing in the NBA. You know, Torian Green and those guys were able to get it done. I don't know why Torian Green's the third name I named, but, you know, college star.
He's nice.
Thinking about Corey Brewer. Exactly. Corey Brewer. That was a pretty nice team. And the fact that they all decided to come back and they did it again. Very different kind of circumstance, but UConn enters the tournament 31-3. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they can somehow figure it out and do the thing and go back to back. Anything else that you got your eye on in this tournament? Something, you know, it's a fun time of year. I always enjoy just the moments that kind of come out of March. But whether it's an unsung hero potentially, you know, one guy unsung hero you think about is now playing a big role for the New York Knicks alongside the guys he won a national championship with. And I'm talking about Dante DiVincenzo. Might not have even been in the league he would have eventually gotten to the league, but he might not have entered when he did had it not been for his national championship performance. So who knows? There could be a Dante DiVincenzo this year waiting in the wing.
I really think that, you know, the kind of just other storyline to look out for is that I think that this is going to be like one of the craziest upsets in just like teams coming out of the woodworks and finding ways to make a run. Like the top teams are all really good, but I really feel like outside of UConn, like everybody has flaws. Like there is flaws in every team. And I'm not saying, I mean, UConn is pretty close to flawless, but like it's going to be, I really do think that it is going to be a coin flip between a lot of these games, even some of these mid-major teams that feel like they belong on the same stage as a lot of these high major teams. And I think it's going to make for an incredible NCAA tournament. So, you know, as a fan, as a, you know, draft evaluator, as a whatever you want to be, like this is going to be an incredible March Madness. And I can't believe that it's already here. I'm so excited.
I know it's going to be wild, and it's funny because, you know, we talked a little bit at the beginning of the year about, man, college basketball's here, and we said the same thing about the NBA season. Oh man, the NBA season is here, and then you get to the end of it, you know, six wins separate one team, unless it's a first four team. We saw NBA play-in teams make it to the finals last year, so why not a first four team? I guess it's only a matter of time. We've seen them make it to the Final Four before, but we have not seen them win at all just yet. So maybe this is a year that potentially happens, but I guess that's just a cool thing this that stands out, you know, about March. Anything can happen. There'll be some moments. We'll see some upsets. We'll see some things happen. Some lower seeds. And we might see a prospect emerge from a lower seed. And one random one that comes to my mind is Kyle O'Quinn, like a 15 seed Norfolk State ends up beating Phil Pressey, Celtics assistant coach Phil Pressey and his Missouri team. And
Kenneth
now,
Fareed.
You know, Kyle O'Quinn's, Kenneth Fareed, these guys get Morehead on State. NBA radars. Exactly. So, you know, Morehead State. So, like, they're back in the tournament this year, too. So, you know, their teams, you know, like James Madison and your Samford, who now playing against an injury-riddled Kansas team, might be the type of team that could do things. And again, you have no idea. We'll record this, and, you know, these things happen so quickly and things change quickly. But it's fun, and there's bound to be some team that's going to have a double-digit seed and make it, you know, past the first round and things like that. Quick shout to the women's side, too. You got South Carolina, pursuit of history, 32-0, pursuit of perfection, 32-0 entering the tournament. Caitlin Clark looking to put a bow on her career. Juju Watkins is just getting started with number one seed USC, and a lot of star power across the board there. So the women's tournament should be pretty interesting. It should be pretty fun to watch, too. Caitlin Clark, outside shot at 4,000 points. I think she has to do a lot of scoring to do it, but the fact for 4,000 points
that's nonsense to think about. That is nonsense to think about. Like, it was a big deal when someone scored 1,000 points in high school. Like, if you hit the 1,000 point mark in high school, it was like, damn, like, he was really getting buckets. Like, Caitlin Clark's like, what are we, like, 4,000 points? That's crazy.
Yeah, like, does she get it? Probably not. I'm looking up real quick to just see where she's at, because she's averaging 32 a game this year, and she enters a tournament 37-71. So, quick maths, that's 229 points. If they go to national championship, that's six games. 6 of 229 is like 36, 37 a game. That's not out of the realm of possibility for her. And I don't know if that math is correct, but we're going to go with it, and we're going to say that's pretty wild. So women's tournament should be just as fun with the star power there. Could be some upsets too, because I think there's just much more talent across the board as the game continues to grow. That being said, shout outs. I don't know what you're thinking this week. Is it a college shout out? Is it a pro shout out? Who you got on your mind this week as we wrap things up here?
It's kind of a combination of the two, and you already sort of spoiled it for me.
Okay.
You know, since Villanova is not going to be participating in March Madness, I want to give a shout out to the Nova Knicks. I want to give a shout out to the Nova Knicks. Jalen Brunson has been playing out of his damn mind. He is the first Knick to score back-to-back 40-point games since Carmelo Anthony. He has been carrying. I want to give a shout-out to Josh Hart, who just played a full 48 minutes the other night.
He is
in a confident battle, or in a constant battle with head coach Tom Thibodeau, a joking battle about how many minutes he's been playing.
Yeah.
He has averaged 42.3 minutes since the All-Star break, and he's going crazy doing it too. 14.4 points, 12.2 rebounds, 5.8 assists per game. He has three triple-doubles in that span. He almost had a 20-20-10 triple-double, except the one night that Tom Thibodeau decided not to play him 40 minutes, he took him out one rebound shy of a 20-20-10 triple-double. And then last but certainly not least, you already brought his name up, Dante DiVincenzo. If that national championship game wasn't foreshadowing of the three-point shooter that he has turned into this season, Dante DiVincenzo has made 216 threes. There are only two players in the NBA that have made more threes than Dante DiVincenzo, and that is Stephen Curry and Luka Doncic. He is making three threes per game, shooting almost 40%, 39.7% from three. So shout out to the Nova Knicks. Since Villanova did not make March Madness, I wanted to make sure they got a little bit of love on the pod here, because those three are playing out of their mind in New York to keep that team afloat.
Respect to the Nova Knicks. It's a good one. I should have known that was coming, but also didn't think about it. I think Josh Hart, five triple-doubles on the season. I know you mentioned three in this span. He's like moving up the Knicks leaderboard pretty quickly, and I think the biggest thing that we always talk about with him is the fact that he rebounds the way that he does, and he not the biggest guy on the floor pretty much ever, but he has that nose for the ball, and he's just a skilled rebound. Josh Barkley.
Yes, I was just going to say, I actually saw that on Basketball Reference right before we came in here. I don't even know where that came from, but I saw that pop up on Basketball Reference, and I was like, I had never seen that nickname next to his name.
It's perfect. Josh Barkley. I feel like it kind of came up earlier in his career, but he wasn't getting rebound numbers like this. It was like he had a couple of games that showed he could rebound, but they didn't really know that was a thing that he did. But now, you know, that's and you mentioned those guys. They've really I don't want to say they've kept the Knicks afloat, because I feel like that would like disparage what the Knicks have going on. But thinking about the injuries, OG is back out of the lineup. His elbow has been bothering him all year. It flared up again. Julius Randle's not back yet. Who knows if Mitchell Robinson will be ready for the playoffs or not. But those three guys, the chemistry, you know, that meme they talked about, you know, let's just get guys who like each other and see what happens. And it works. And I think the personalities they have are the perfect type of people to get into that type of battle, joking battle with Tibbs, and keep it going from there. My shout out is actually to the Houston Rockets. I was looking at the Western Conference standings, you know, thinking about the fact that the Lakers and the Warriors have just kind of been going back and forth, you know, for that ninth and 10th seed, and pretty much seems like the play-in tournament is locked, and it almost is. And we've said that a few times, but late season six game win streak from the Houston Rockets. And I wanted to make the shout out a little bit broader, but I want to narrow it in too. And this is genuine for what he's doing on the floor. My man, Jalen Green, is locking in. And, yep. And we talked about it. He's becoming the scorer that we talked about him being. And I think he's been given a little bit of a freer reign. Earlier tonight, the night we recorded this, 42 points, 10 boards against the Wizards. His last three games, two of them against the Wizards. So, I mean, you know, take that with a little bit of grain of salt. We talk about college basketball. I don't know if they would advance past UConn. But still, you know, you talk about no, they actually win. They're pros, we know. But actually, last three games, 37-8 against the Wizards. Last Thursday, Saturday, 26-11 against the Cavs, and tonight, 42-10 on 57-54-85 shooting splits against the Wizards. He's figuring it out. Reminder, let's not write players off early on in their career. It's all about situation, all about the guys that are around them, all about the coaches they're playing under, and the buy-in. So the Rockets have something good brewing, potentially, especially if they can close out the season, even if it doesn't result in a postseason berth. I think that the seeds are being planted right now. They got a draft pick coming from Brooklyn from that Harden trade, I believe. So they got things going in the right direction. What's going on in Houston?
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Green, Western Conference Player of the Week. And it's really unfortunate that, you know, like you said, they're rattling off a six-game win streak, and it's right after Alperen Şengün had gone down with an injury when he was playing some of the best basketball of his young career. So, you know, I mean, I know that probably takes a little bit of wind out of the sails, but they've still found a way to win without him, and they're staying afloat. So, you know, shout out to the Rockets. And, you know, just to kind of tie a bow on everything, you know, you talk about how it could build momentum into next season. They have a draft pick coming up and everything like that. That was a team that I had Dalton Knecht mock to, because I was like, you know what, this is a team, just as you described, late in the lottery, that, you know, could use a win now player. They're committed to winning now. So, you know, I mean, hey, if you're a Houston Rockets fan, you fall out of the play-in tournament, that you can, you know, check out March Madness and watch your boy Dalton Knecht, who might be rocking with you guys next year.
Yeah, last point, it's a little bit different, and it's a different make of the team. No two teams are alike, and no two seasons are alike, but I feel like we were having some similar conversations. Their record wasn't as strong. The Rockets, as we're talking about this, are 33-35, 2.5 games out of 10th. But last year, the Magic were building some good momentum at the end of the year, and they were displaying good habits. And we were like, you know what? It's wild. The Magic are like 4 or 5 games out of the play-in tournament. Had they been better earlier in the year, they'd be in it. And now here we are earlier at the top of the show saying they could potentially win 50 games this season. So I think if you're a Rockets fan, you should be excited, because it seemed like that franchise was really going to be down and out for several years. But they made some key moves, some smart draft picks, and the future could be bright as long as they continue to pivot the right way moving forward, bringing in vets like Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks as well. It's important to have guys like that in the locker room. I knew there was one more thing that I wanted to mention before getting out of here, and it's something I'll ask you for your opinion on. I mentioned Dylan Brooks, and maybe think about it. Today, FIBA unveiled the groupings for the basketball tournament at the Summer Olympics. Canada knows that they are in a group with two unknown teams so far, qualifier one and qualifier three, but they are in a group with Australia, the other groups, France, Germany, Japan, and a qualifier group C, Serbia, South Sudan, and the United States of America. So we could get Nikola Jokic, maybe like Bogdan Bogdanovic, Nikola Jovic, and there are a lot of Serbian stars in the NBA against Team USA, who is thinking about bringing the Monstars out there. So two quick ones on Team USA's draw with Serbia, and then Canada in a group. At least we know they're going to be in a group with Australia, which is probably going to be the last dance for Patty Mills and potentially Joe Ingles too.
Yeah, I mean, with everything that was going on today, I actually completely forgot to look at the groupings until you just said that. So I just pulled it up real quick while you were going through, because I know you wrote that one over at the Sporting News. But yeah, that's really intriguing. I mean, especially with Joel Embiid's injury and how important he's going to be to mm-hmm. the USA front court
right.
to get paired in the same group as Serbia and potentially Nikola Jokic. Now that, you know, becomes a lot more urgent to have him or Anthony Davis, you know, some of these big name bigs that the United States has not been able to bring to these tournaments in recent years. So, you know, that'll be massive. And then, you know, you look at Canada's draw. I mean, Australia, like you said, that's another up and coming country that feels like, you know, they have players making an impact all over the NBA. So, you know, those are two of the most up and coming programs in all of, you know, FIBA basketball that could potentially go head to head in that group stage. So, you know, I mean, it's a little ways away, but I'm very much looking forward to some Olympic hoops once, you know, everything winds down from the NBA finals and the NBA draft. And then, you know, it's one of those years that it just keeps on going. And guys like us, I mean, we're going to be covering it, and I'm looking forward to it big time.
One last thing I will say about those two potential qualifiers in Group A with Australia and Canada. I'm not going to go through all the teams because it's 12 potential teams, but among those 12 teams, it's Spain. It's the Bahamas, who could have DeAndre Ayton, Buddy Hield. We talked about VJ Edgecombe. I don't know what his deal is going to be with enrolling in college next year. And Eric Gordon's been playing for the Bahamas as well. And Kai Jones, shout out to him also, seems to be doing much better, signed with the 76ers after kind of a rough go the past few months on and off the floor. And the other group, Slovenia, is in that group. So Luka Doncic, he never turns down an opportunity to play for his home country. Croatia as well, Dominican Republic. I know a lot depends on Karl-Anthony Towns' meniscus, but he could be playing as well. So right now, we know it's Canada and Australia, but there is a lot to be determined, and that could really dictate. And also the Canadian women's team is in a group with Nigeria, Australia, and France. The qualifiers have been determined already on the women's side of things. So got some good basketball, and we haven't even talked about 3x3, but we will get to that as the summer goes on. That's it for now for March Madness. By the time you hear this, we will be going into the second week, and hopefully some of the prospects and players we talked about are still in it. If not, hopefully you didn't put those teams in your bracket. Thanks again for tuning in to NBA Sound System. We appreciate those of you who subscribe and share with your friends and give us good feedback, because we always take it to heart. In a good way or a bad way, but we don't let it get us out of our way, because we're going to keep coming to you each and every week. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. We will catch you back here on NBA Sound System.